Today is the day Kevin Durant makes his debut in purple and orange, and on today's episode of Locked On Suns, we break down everything you should be watching for in Suns Hornets and in the first game of a new era for the Suns. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, a writer at Suns.com, and the host of the Just Basketball Show, wherever you get podcasts. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Wednesday. The Suns play the Hornets tonight, and Kevin Durant will be suiting up. That is for sure. They released a tweet on Tuesday. I can tell you for a fact that by the time you're listening to this, a story by yours truly at Suns.com will probably be up previewing, getting you ready for the game. That is what we are here to talk about. If you're finding us for the first time, we're on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So hit follow or subscribe wherever you're finding this show. Get it in your feed every single Monday through Friday. We're free every day. No paywall. Best way to keep us that way is to listen, subscribe, follow, tell your friends, tell your family, tell every Suns fan in your life to do the same. You can also follow along at Locked On PHX Suns, where you can have some fun on game nights, maybe hear my thoughts, communicate, joke, analyze with your Suns fan friends over on Twitter. Okay, we have a lot to get to today, so I do not want to belabor that at all. Again, Kevin Durant will make his debut, and we're talking about what to watch for, what to expect, what to get hyped about now that the day is finally here. Number one on that list is not going to be super complicated. I'm not going to make things difficult. It is just one of many games, so I don't want to overstate it and get too in the weeds. The Suns are going to win this game. I think that's the first thing to watch for. They're 10-point favorites, okay? 10-point favorites in this game against the Charlotte Hornets on the road, and I think you know that this game should not be difficult, right? LaMelo Ball just went out probably for the season. They're not a good team anyway. The Suns have beaten them already this year in an ugly game. The Suns should win this game. It is going to be a little bit weird for him to make his debut on the road, right? And to do it in a game that's a little not hyped, a little low energy. The Thunder game at home on the Friday after the break would have been poetic in its own way, right? With the Thunder connection, having obviously been drafted by that franchise, being at home, being on national TV, whatever, would have been nice. I think that would have actually been the best way to bring him on, because it's not a huge game, but it is, you know, home, and it is a big time matchup with the West standings and with the national TV audience. Oh, well. Sunday, I actually think it was smart not to do that. Matinee games are a little strange. Giannis was also not playing in that game, and it was a road rematch of the finals with all the crap that goes into that. I don't think that would have been smart. And so here we are in a game that the Suns are expected to win with or without Durant, and in a game where we'll see if he has a minutes limit. That's obviously going to be something to watch. That's not something I'm going to dive into because we just don't know. We'll see. I would think he will be on a little bit of a limit, at least for the time being. They have a game next on Friday and then again on Sunday, so no back-to-backs in the immediate future this week. But still, you want to play things slowly. You don't want to overdo it. And as we'll get into in the next segment, I think that there's plenty to be figured out without overloading. So with that said, the Suns are going to win the game. I think the sort of other thing that I haven't spent a lot of time talking about, I'm hoping to finally unveil. You've heard me tease that I have a guest lined up. I'm hoping that show will be Friday of this week. Aaron Edwards will help me recap the Hornets game on Wednesday night into Thursday morning, so keep an eye out for all of that. But something I haven't been able to talk about that I hope that guest will help me with, but that I want to do now, is the the magnitude of this, right? You know Kevin Durant. This is like the Chris Paul thing, but that was a pandemic, and it was understood that he was at this new point in his career, right? We knew he wasn't going to stay in Oklahoma City long term. We knew Chris Paul was going to be traded somewhere, and we knew that the Suns made sense in that they needed another guard, right? They needed that finishing piece at point guard to cap things off. And so, yes, there was the understanding that that was another chapter for Chris Paul, but it felt so obvious that I think it just slid into place. And then with COVID, no one was really around to watch those games until end of the regular season into the playoffs. And then it was off and running, and they were a fully formed championship caliber team, and that became the story. Something that I think we will start to understand and feel right away starting tonight is the way that Durant is just going to be a part of this team's history and vice versa, right? This is a player, again, you know him, drafted to Seattle, plays the two guard under PJ Carlesimo in Seattle. Then the Supersonics move to Oklahoma City. They make that surprise competitive first-round series against the Lakers in 2010, the finals in 2011, a more competitive series than I think that 4-1 victory by Miami would go on to show. That was a tight series. Durant played LeBron toe-to-toe for the most part. There's that infamous block charge call, I believe, in Game 2, although I'm not positive it was Game 2. Might have been Game 4. I don't remember. You remember 2016 when he goes up 3-1 against the Warriors, and then the Warriors come back, and then the Warriors lose the title, and Durant joins them. You remember the Achilles tear. You remember Durant leaving. You remember Durant coming back. You remember the second round against the Bucks when he's at maybe the absolute peak of his powers. Obviously, the two championships in Golden State before the Achilles tear, two finals MVPs. You remember even before that, 2013, the speech, "You're the real MVP," the way he poured his heart and soul out for his mom there. You remember the four podcasts with Bill Simmons, in one of which he name-dropped Devin Booker and maybe set the dominoes up for him to eventually arrive here. You remember the press conference, right? Just last week when he's announced, and 2 weeks ago maybe, he's announced and there's a crowd and it's crazy and it feels real, and you're going to remember tomorrow forever. Except the difference is he's going to be playing for your team. You know, this is a guy who is, you know, The Athletic did a big blowout NBA top 75, their own list, right? Where they really actually ranked them instead of what the NBA did of just honoring the 76, which was funny, guys. And Durant came in at 13 in The Athletic's thing. And they have guys who have been around the game. You know, David Aldridge is involved in that list. People who have covered teams and this league for a long time. John Hollinger, Sam Amick, Marcus Thompson, people that have been around these players as well as been around the league as a whole. And they gave him the 13th spot ahead of Jerry West, ahead of Steph Curry, although maybe that changed with that title, ahead of Karl Malone. And he's going to play for the Suns. He's the best player to ever wear a Suns jersey. I don't know, and I don't really care right now, at least, to have any sort of conversation about whether he's the best Sun. Of course he's not. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't played one game. We're not doing that conversation. This is the most legendary player, most legendary figure in this game to ever play for this team. It starts tonight. I don't know if this game will be memorable. I don't know if we'll look back and feel like this moment in time, this game was something magnificent. It probably won't be. Most games aren't. But I can tell you this is the beginning of something we will remember. And I just hope that is not lost on anybody, that there's going to be this push. There's going to be this grand experiment of these last 20 games trying to integrate a player who is the best player to ever be traded at the deadline, who is the only player in NBA history to be traded to a team with championship hopes and become their best player mid-season. That has never happened it's going to be crazy, but at the same time, I think that there is an element that I hope is not lost on anybody, that you can step back, let that soak in, appreciate it, and enjoy it. And that's really what I'm going to be trying to embody and feel and soak in while I'm watching this game. That being said, there are some X's and O's things that I want to talk about. Two very basic, very simple offense, one on offense, one on defense. We'll get into those next. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's top-rated sportsbook. America's number one sportsbook, because new customers who do sign up get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. You can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained. The Suns, as I said, 10-point favorites on Wednesday night against the Charlotte Hornets. We have NBA Finals matchups. We have NBA Finals exact results up here. We have player awards, conference, and division winners. The Suns are the favorites to win the West at plus 230. The Celtics and Bucks both in almost a dead heat in the East. You can get some money early before the seedings really start to take shape. Put some money down, see if you can get some good value there. All of it and more on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, so X's and O's on the court. What are we looking for? What are we watching for? Offense we'll start with, and it's pretty simple. It's, if you have listened to this show in the past few days, you'll not be surprised to hear this be where I go. What I am watching for is how much structure does Monty Williams try to impose onto the Kevin Durant Suns, right? I told you, I've said multiple times since I went to practice last Thursday that Monty Williams repeated a phrase that has stuck with me, which is, let the players teach. He's going to let the players teach him how they should play, right? He's not going to coach them into a concrete mix and then lay it out and let it dry as exactly perfectly according to his vision. What he's going to do is, I don't know if I can keep the concrete metaphor going, but he is just simply going to let them play. That's what he's saying. But we also know that there is that conflicting, tiny, little thing in the back of his head, which is called trying to win a championship. And in order to do that, you have to get this figured out quicker than is comfortable. And so what I'm watching is how much structure will Monty impose on them? You know, if you listened, and I recommend everybody does, to the ETC's podcast, Kevin Durant does it with Eddie Gonzalez. Durant had a funny comment in there about how Monty loves to coach. And the more that I hear this stuff, the more that I talk to Monty, cover him, hear other people talk about him, on and on. This guy couldn't. He is probably the coach in the NBA most like Greg Popovich. And this is just one other example. The idea of the first thing Durant observes is just the love of coaching. And I don't want to paint it in any kind of way. I don't know what Durant necessarily meant by it, but I think that it felt to me like he was saying Monty is a little more gung-ho and in the weeds and, you know, really deep on the coaching, teaching, you know, breaking down film, constructing new ideas into a team philosophy. He's in that stuff more than maybe Durant expected. And so I would say here's what my guess is. I think tonight we don't see a lot of structure. We'll see some of the sets that we're used to because they're not that complicated. But I don't think we'll see a ton of, you know, drawn up plays, called plays. I think we see a lot of basic stuff, a lot of the Suns' bread and butter offense, and a lot of simple pick and roll, simple isolation, simple transition, just read and react offense. I do think over the course of the season, it will happen. I don't think Monty is going to take his hands off the steering wheel completely and say, all right, roll it out and let's see what happens. That's where I come down. Defensively, the other on-court thing to watch, and I want to get into, to close the show, I don't think I said this, to talk about that ETC's episode and an interesting thing from a culture and personality standpoint that Durant elucidated on regarding his friendship, his partnership, his teammate relationship with Kyrie Irving. So we'll get to that in a second. But defensively, how much do the Suns switch? That's going to be interesting to me. Ask Monty about this, and in another very Greg Popovichian moment, he scoffed at me and kind of gave me that line, right? We'll see. We'll let the players teach me. I have been talking, I know you've heard me, about the level of flexibility and creativity that Durant allows for this team, particularly as it relates to DeAndre Ayton, right? Ayton is a player who we know has the ability at times, even dating back to his first season in the NBA, switching out onto Giannis, switching out onto LeBron James, guarding those guys mano a mano on the perimeter, right? He can do it against small guards, maybe not as consistently, but is Monty Williams, are the Suns coaches and players going to embrace that right away, or is that going to be a sort of break in case of emergency thing? And then once again, the theme of the show, how willing and able and aggressively are they going to try to implement that in season? Because they have to, right? If they want it to be an option in the playoffs, even in case of emergency, they have to try it in the playoffs. There's just not enough time to naturally let it happen. And so do we see it tonight? Again, I'll just give my thoughts on kind of to answer my own question. If we will see it, I would guess that we will see more of a willingness to switch 1 through 5 outside of just the very end of the shot clock, because the Suns' rules, which teams will have these, right, for switching during the Monty Williams era, has been switch 1 through 4, rarely switch the center. Ayton is not really going to be switched outside of the very end of the shot clock. You're going to switch like for like, especially off on ball, but also off ball. And you're going to try to keep Ayton at the rim to protect. So what I think you will see is a greater willingness to switch those centers, to switch Ayton, probably just Ayton. I guess Landale and Biombo probably not. To switch Ayton in an on ball or off ball situation, but most likely on ball, because you don't need to switch a center off ball and get him away from the rim just to go guard the corner or something, right? So on ball screens outside of just the last 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock in a pinch. I don't think it'll be so scripted where we see the Suns every single 1-5 pick and roll, every single screen that the center is involved in, we see Ayton switching. I doubt it's going to be that aggressive, probably ever. But a good hint will be if Ayton ends up in those spots outside of the last few seconds of a shot clock more consistently starting tonight. And I do think we will probably see at least a couple of instances where we collectively raise our eyebrows and go, oh, that's different. And it'll be because they know Durant will be there as a rim protector, and that flexibility and creativity defensively will matter come playoff time. All right, that's it. The start of a new era, the history of the moment, what is likely to be a blowout win, how much structure do they put in on offense, and do they switch, and how much? All right, that's 4 things for you to watch when the Suns and Hornets tip off. Early tip, also, don't forget, 5 o'clock local time tip off in Charlotte. Okay, I listened to the ETC's podcast. I made a point last week. I'm going to hit that subscribe button on that show, because I've listened to it here and there, but I need to keep an eye. New episode, 30 minutes, went up Tuesday. I went on my morning run, press play, listened to it. If you didn't catch it, if you didn't even know it happened, I will break it down for you, starting with and focused on some comments Durant made around Irving. Not to rehash their relationship, because that's old news, but what can it tell us about the Suns and Durant's tone and mood and perspective as he enters this new chapter? We'll talk about all of that in just one second. First, one more quick break. All right, so some quick hits on the ETC's podcast. Durant basically just went through a whole bunch of different stuff. Quick hits on the trade, when he felt like it was going to happen, how he reacted, the details of what went back, regrets from the Brooklyn time, all this stuff. He actually didn't talk a lot about the Suns, probably because he hasn't actually played yet and he didn't want to jump the gun. But the thing that stood out to me, and again, I want to be clear that I don't know the man. I'm not going to pull this one quote out from the podcast and claim that it explains every single thing about Kevin Durant. But it's interesting and it is relevant. So he was talking about Kyrie Irving, and if you remember from the press conference, if you listened to that or I talked about it afterward, you might have heard my thoughts, whatever it was, you will remember that Durant said that he was able to separate Kyrie's business situation, his contract situation, from what they were achieving together on the court. Although Durant was obviously hurt, it didn't really cross over. So we kind of knew that. That's somewhat interesting to me, and I do believe it because he's said it now multiple times, and I would imagine that maybe that's one of the things Durant learned during his time with Kyrie Irving is, you know, the amount of stuff that happened off the court, you sort of have to be able to compartmentalize and to separate that from the basketball. Otherwise, you would probably drive yourself crazy, and it would be a waste of your mental energy. It's just your coworker, your buddy, but we all don't know everything about all of our friends or our coworkers or whatever, even if they're our best friends in the world or our closest confidants in the workplace, right? So I get that. What he said today on the podcast, though, that interested me, that sort of deepened this, is that they haven't talked since, all right? There's a part of that that I feel like is a Kyrie part. Again, I would think there was probably a closeness when Durant and Kyrie embarked on this situation, embarked on this journey together. Matt Sullivan has written a book about their friendship and connection, the time they spent together during COVID, working out, hanging out, all that stuff. You know, the vaccine situation and the anti-Semitism stuff created a cloud over Kyrie that I would imagine maybe created distance between those two people. That is not anything that I know for sure, but again, it would make sense. You couple that with what he said about the compartmentalization between the basketball and the business, and maybe it's not a surprise that they haven't talked since, but to bring it to the Suns, I think what this, the perspective that it gave me, that I'm going to kind of carry going forward as I'm thinking about this team, covering this team, watching this team, and thinking about how they fit, is it really is just basketball for these guys, right? And I think that that can actually be a positive, because I was kind of chewing on it after listening, and Monty Williams is a guy who I don't think, again, to go back to that Popovich thing, right? I think Popovich wants to get in the building, teach, educate, inform, develop, and then go home. Not to say that he doesn't carry Bonds. We know the epic dinners that he would host, and I think Monty does some of those things on his own too. But this is not like Steve Kerr, for instance, to pull another example. He had some experience with Pop, but he is a Phil Jackson coach. You know, it is about the joy of playing. It is about finding the connections and through lines and points of bonding between the people who go out on the basketball court and compete together. That is very Phil. Steve Kerr is that kind of coach. Pop is, you know, if you remember anything from the Popovich era, it was he always talks about how the best thing Tim Duncan ever did for that group, besides the quadruple doubles and finals MVPs and everything else, is that he allowed himself to be coached, and he set the precedent for the whole organization that I'm the richest, best, most talented, most, you know, having everything I could ever want guy in this building, and I am humble enough to be told what to do and to collaborate within a group. I think that's how Monty thinks about this, right? And so what he expects from a star player is humble yourself, commit, work hard, listen, and care. Commit, again, to repeat myself. That's different, and I think that when I hear Durant sort of say that about Kyrie, that they still haven't talked and that he's able to just sort of break off of that situation, I don't hear, oh, things got so toxic. I hear, it's work. It doesn't need to go deeper than that. It can be beneficial to go deeper than that. I'm sure there's plenty of teams that have the best camaraderie ever and they're over at each other's homes all the time, hanging out. They're the best friends, and that helps them win. Great, I'm sure. You know, Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes seem pretty darn close. They hang out. They've been in Phoenix. I've seen them at Suns games, right? They come to spring training. They go to golf tournaments, all this stuff. They're buddies. I'm not saying that's a bad way to do it, but I'm saying it can work the other way. And I think for Durant, it will fit within this group. You think about it, right? Booker and Paul developed a bond over basketball. They did runs during the summer together. They, you know, knew each other through agency stuff. They had a mutual respect of one another. I don't exactly get the impression, outside of maybe some appearances at the Waste Management Phoenix Open and whatnot, that 37-year-old Chris Paul with a wife and kids in Southern California is necessarily spending a lot of hangout time, quality bonding, let's, you know, play darts and drink beer together, right at Book's house on the weekends. I don't exactly think that, you know, 25, 26-year-old Devin Booker is relating to his older teammate in that way. You know, prior to the trade, like, the best bonded relationships, friendships on this team, I would say, were Javon Carter and Mikal Bridges, Cam Payne and Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges, maybe that foursome together, you know. But Torrey Craig has a son, right? Like, Bismack Biyombo is a committed to his family, committed to his charity work, all this stuff. I believe he has a family. You just go through it. Cam Payne, I guess, you know, he does his thing. Maybe he's the most similar to some of these other guys. But, like, I think, let's just keep it at the top. I don't want to try to have some grand unifying theory of this team. Let me not do that. Booker, Paul, and Monty, I think, already bonded by this same view and philosophy about basketball, and I think Durant will fit right into that. There is a love and a passion and a nerdiness about basketball that is one part of this, but I think the other ability to sort of not take it too seriously, commit fully without living every moment of it and without expecting that it's always going to be this rah-rah whatever, I think that locker room fit will be very good. And I guess I went a lot deeper. I dug a very deep hole from that one Kevin Durant comment about Kyrie Irving, but I think it can tell us a lot. You just track the way that he talked about Kyrie, and I think that evolution and the comments of how he thinks about relationships with his teammates and the best players on those teams is really going to help here. That's what I will say. I'll keep on that thread. I will come back to this. I will try to weed some of those things out, and I will report back, as it were. All right, that'll be it. That'll wrap us up for today. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Hit follow, hit subscribe wherever you're listening. In the meantime, go make Locked On NBA your second listen. Catch up on Tuesday night's games. Get ready for Wednesday. All the latest news from our variety of hosts. That show's available on all podcast platforms as well. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.